Penguin Random House Audio presents A Night at the Sweet Gumhead, Drag, Drugs, Disco, and Atlanta's Gay Revolution. This is the author, Martin Paget. For Don, if he could see me now. Preface. In 1996, I lived in Birmingham, Alabama, where I led a double life. I believed coming out there would come with unbearable consequences, so I kept to myself. Each weekend, I arrowed east, sometimes at 100 miles an hour, to Atlanta. I screwed up the courage to go to my first gay bar in Atlanta. I drove down Cheshire Bridge Road, pulled into the parking lot, and took a deep breath, not knowing what to expect. When I opened the door to Hoedown's, a country and western joint, the catchy refrain of familiar twangy music invited me in. Winona Judd's Heaven Help My Heart. On the dance floor, a carousel of men in white cowboy hats whirled in line dance formation. Some glanced at me. I smiled back at them. I breathed a sigh of relief. I belonged. 2 decades before, on the same stretch of road, the godfather of Atlanta gay nightlife had opened another country and western bar and made himself its sheriff. At the county seat, Frank Powell built a replica of a small town inside an old warehouse, complete with wagon wheels, a country store, and a wishing well. Powell owned more than a dozen gay bars in Atlanta from the late 1960s until he died in 1996. He built an underground universe that came to life at night, after respectable Atlanta had long gone to bed. He opened quiet drinking bars, fancy fern bars, glamorous lesbian bars, hot disco bars, and seedy hustler bars. He named his most famous nightclub after his hometown in Florida. It was the showplace of the South, the Sweet Gumhead. Today, American lesbians, gays, bisexuals, transgender people, and queers can get married. We can find short-term special friends or life partners on our smartphones. We can venture proudly and safely into the straight world, outside the confines of bars and clubs once designated specifically as gay spaces. 50 years ago, none of those things was true. Queer people were shamed and muted, jailed, exiled, and put in danger. Often they were left no choice but to leave home, and to run away to cities where they might be accepted, or at least tolerated. Even in those cities, gay bars were dangerous and illicit places, but they were also the birthplace of the emerging gay rights movement. Queer communities formed, and they demanded equality. It was a time of heady optimism. Many believed anything was possible, even progress. The movement had its most visible roots in New York and San Francisco, but after it flared in the riots at the seedy Stonewall Inn Tavern in 1969, it spread quickly to cities such as Atlanta, a relatively progressive oasis surrounded by ultra-conservative mores. In the 1970s, Atlanta's cruisy electric core was the Sweet Gumhead nightclub, where an intoxicating blend of drag, drugs, disco, and revolution had a pivotal role in uniting Atlanta's gay civil rights movement and in turning Stonewall's rebellion into art. The Sweet Gumhead is where Atlanta earned its reputation for top-flight female impersonation. It's where Atlanta drag came out of the closet. Before RuPaul Charles, there was John Greenwell, who ran away from Alabama to Atlanta and found a new home at the Sweet Gumhead. John became Rachel Wells, and Rachel became a drag superstar. Along the way, John put the two halves of his life back together. John left the marches and protests to activists like Bill Smith. A son of devout Baptists, Bill took a seat as a city commissioner, then took over the most influential gay newspaper in the South, The Barb. When his addictions and predilections were revealed, he lost everything. Then it all died. In the same summer of 1981, when the Sweet Gumhead closed, the New York Times reported on a rare cancer seen in 41 homosexuals. I met my future husband just a few months after I moved to Atlanta. I hadn't come out. We dated quietly, in moments stolen and moments made, in a gray space between old friends and new. We visited a friend in the hospital one evening in the months before protease inhibitors became widely available. Our friend had contracted pneumonia. His spirits were fine, but his prognosis was mixed. When he was admitted, his T-cell count had fallen to 2. He dubbed those 2 T-cells Itsy and Bitsy. They were survivors. As for him, no one could be sure. "This is what being gay will be like," I warned myself, as if it were something I could change. I spent countless, panicked, sleepless nights negotiating a new existence, one that let me be true to myself, while I faced the fear that my truth could drive my life away from me, one family member at a time, one T-cell at a time. I had run away before, and running away had exhausted me, and resolved nothing. I stood fast and brave. I survived. Soon after I came out, a few months after that hospital visit, I bought an old Art Deco-style apartment on Cheshire Bridge Road, next door to a strip club, housed in a building that had once been home to the Sweet Gumhead. History has given us sagas of World War, the Wild West, the suffragist movement, and the civil rights movement. Relatively few stories of the queer revolution have been recorded. Many memories of the battle for equality that followed Stonewall were deemed unimportant, or they were forgotten, or they simply faded as the community fought for its very survival as the AIDS era dawned. History is a bridge made of sand. I hope this story reclaims some of the joy and optimism of that brief time, and that it charts new constellations for future generations to study. As for me, it's something of a memoir. In many ways, John and Bill and I have lived the same life, in our search for the place we call home, in search of our true selves. That search always is urgent, but it's particularly urgent now. While same-sex marriage has normalized aspects of our queer lives to a degree, assimilation is one of many things that have eroded our sense of community. We're losing a distinct dimension of the queer experience. We're being straightwashed, even as an unashamed army of bigots wants to turn back the clock. This story marks our progress, but it should also remind us that progress is fragile and requires regular upkeep and maintenance, and occasionally, righteous anger. We must pass on these lessons and legends before they are lost, before we are lost. This isn't my story of Atlanta. It's mine, too. It belongs to us. This is our story of freedom. Atlanta, Georgia, June 28th, 2020. Introduction. Atlanta, August 1969 to December 1970. They each paid a dollar to the cashier at the office desk in the narrow lobby and made their way toward a theater cloaked in fireproof turquoise curtains. Among them, a woman in tight brown curls and wide, hopeful eyes. A man eager to see breasts on screen. A woman eager to see them, too. A red carpet laid out in Oscar style led them down the aisle toward Andy Warhol's Lonesome Cowboys in its third week at the theater despite terrible reviews. They whispered and giggled and chatted. The girl with wide eyes ate a submarine sandwich, while others munched on popcorn. They had filled about half the sea-green rocking chair seats when the simplex projector woke up and lit the screen with images of naked bodies, quick-cut visuals, and non-sequitur plot points. Cowboys had cost Warhol's factory just $3,000 to produce, and none of the money seemed to have been spent on the script. Men thrusted their pelvises in each other's faces. The cameras stared blankly at naked torsos and buttocks and breasts, and actors indulged in some lightly comic cross-dressing. The nonsensical parody of Western films grated on the sensibilities of high-minded cinema. It also grated on the high-minded people who lived in the expensive houses near the Ansley Mall mini-cinema. They complained to the local police about its more lurid, even pornographic moments. The movie flickered in the dark, across gay and straight and lesbian faces, but in the lobby the scene exploded into action. Unknown men in suits swarmed in without a word. One stood guard in the lobby and set up a movie camera. 2 March.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?